Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Brett DeLuder with us. Of course, we're going to be talking about UFOs and your phone calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Brett DeLuder as we talk about UFOs. Brett, your website is your Facebook account, right?
That's right. I can't seem to get my website up. It gets hacked time and time again, so I'm not sure what to make about that.
But. Who's looking after you?
You mean in terms of a website?
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have anybody right now, actually. I'm just kind of, it's kind of on the back burner. I have other fish to fry. But that's coming. That's coming. I'd rather produce some DVDs and get some work out of there that I've been wanting to do, and then I can allocate some funds for the web.
All right, cool. And back to magic again. It's fascinating, the different aspects of it, isn't it?
It is. A rabbit hole that you may never come out of if you have the intention to really learn about it. Yeah. You'd learn about it for your whole lifetime. And the best magicians, like say somebody like Aleister Crowley, spent a lifetime devoted to that kind of thing. And, you know, when you realize it's the language of consciousness, it's a language of the soul. You can manipulate your soul or other ethereal energies using these more specific forms of magic in these secret societies. That really fascinates people, I think, you know, because humans like power, just like it said in The Lord of the Rings. Human beings are fascinated with power. And some people could take it or leave it, and those are the humble people that work hard and mind their own business and do their thing, raise their family. And then there's other people that really feel the need to seek that out. And that was definitely me early on. I wanted to find out what magic was, and to the point where I came up with my own definition. And I see how looking through what I call the magical lens, the mysteries of the world become more clear to me once you see the magic behind them, whether it's, you know, politics or entertainment or like the music industry or Hollywood, for example, or even corporations, right? They're all operating on some sort of a ritual-based intention.
What do you think of the latest revelations that the government spent 20-some million dollars to study UFOs?
Honestly, I hadn't heard that. I've been a little bit out of touch.
Okay.
I've been working up in the mountains, right, and getting real super creative. But
the fact that they would admit that, how do you feel about that?
I honestly, George, I don't feel like any information that comes out from the government is for the intended benefit of the people.
Right.
I think it's to placate an ever-increasing angry public about being lied to about various things, UFOs being at the top of that list. And, you know, I'm under the impression that we're all being played in a giant public relations campaign by the government on the public, and that there are competing public relations campaigns, all competing for the attention of human consciousness. And I think the government's version of this public relations campaign works really well to distract people from the real issues going on. If you're talking in a material sense, of course, that's money. Money's the big issue. The manipulation of money, how wealth is created, how the value of money is determined. And then on spiritual levels, how magic is used against us. It's used against us in law. It's used against us on spiritual levels, on soul levels. If you've seen the movie Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Love that movie.
That really depicted what the elite do. And they get together in giant sex rituals and propagate the energy it takes to manifest a desired outcome. And so maybe not all of them do it the way it's portrayed in the movie, but using that movie as a metaphor, definitely groups of elites are getting together and manifesting their outcome using the law of attraction in ways that they would like to keep secret from the rest of us.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's go and pick up Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina. Hey, Barry.
Hello, George. What a pleasure it is, buddy. And Brett, you have got a head full of brains, man. I'm telling you, I'm loving this show tonight. Let me say a quick shout to Cornelius, Thomas, Joe, and Joe. And anyway, George, I was telling Tommy, have you heard about, it was just announced Wednesday afternoon yesterday, there's a Canadian radio telescope that is partially powered by the hydrogen atom. And, George, it is receiving repeated radio bursts from way deep out in space. And of course, I'm sure you've heard that SETI has this one-time bleeps and then nothing. But this is a repeated signal.
This is still coming, yeah.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about it?
Yeah, we're looking into that.
Okay, great. But anyway, Brett, boy, oh boy, what a wonderful story about your UFO experience. And I'm like you. I think there are inner space UFOs and outer space UFOs. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think it's a phenomena that maybe from one angle thinks like we have a grasp on it. We might think we have a grasp on it, but it's elusive still. We can't really put a finger on it, and most people are powerless against it. If they come to take you, for example. So again, this is why I'm leaning towards the spiritual angle towards UFOs, because, you know, one of the leading aliens, again, is Semyase in UFO lore, right? And that's just happens to be a derivative of the name of a fallen angel. A guy like Joe Jordan in Florida is chronicling an ever-growing number of people claiming to use the name of Jesus to stop an abduction. And so things are building up to point towards the idea that at least some aliens are really demons, and that it's just demons like throughout history, but they take different forms depending on the different cultures in the different time periods that in which they appear. So like Jacques Vallée would say that the fairies of old are just the aliens of today, you know, same beings in a different cultural context. So are they inner and outer? I think definitely they're physical. I think they can go interdimensional. And I think like a demon itself, they have this elusive nature that we can't really put a finger on. You know, right as soon as we think we got it figured out, bam, it might hit us from a different angle and confuse us or make us hallucinate or come to us in that dream state where we're not really operating on all our physical faculties. So I agree, inner and outer, yes.
Have you ever been scared when you were investigating UFO cases at all, Brett?
yes, and it's not because of the UFO part of it. I was talking with a young person about UFOs and things like that, and a small argument broke out, and then this person's eyes changed and the voice changed, and they became highly critical of me. I was speechless, George, and I just let this person kind of get it out. And at one point, I thought I was going to be attacked. You know, I just thought to myself, if that's an alien, then it's not a really good alien, and I would guess maybe a reptilian. But other than that, I mean, it was dark. The feeling in the room changed. And you know, this is supposedly within a UFO alien abduction context. So that was one of several experiences that have gotten me to lean towards this spiritual angle. And that, you know, I'm not all the way over to say that there are no aliens and that they're all demons. Or like researcher William Lynn says that the space aliens were all created as PR from the Pentagon to distract from anti-gravity technology and other high technology. I'm not willing to go there yet, but I think it's clear that at least some aliens are demons, and otherwise we wouldn't have these really dark abductions, and guys like Joe Jordan wouldn't be chronicling lists of people using the name of Jesus to stop the abduction when nothing else seems to work.
Good point. So. George in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Real quick, because I know I want to be brief so you can have other callers. Is there one supreme higher consciousness, a.k.a. God, or is it only many levels of interdimensionals and physical beings with higher levels of consciousness? I have another question, if you can let me say that one, but if you can answer that one first.
Okay. Thank you for your question, George. I would say, you know, I'm sitting in the home of my ascended master student friend. He's 85 years old. He just got back from Mount Shasta this weekend and had a private session with David Lewis. Again, he's the man on earth that speaks for Saint Germain. And Harold and I go back and forth about this God question. Is Jesus just one of the ascended masters? I mean, there's no argument between the two traditions, say, fundamental Christians and ascended masters, that Jesus is a very important figure who ascended. The ascended masters just say that he's one of a pantheon of multitudes, and that any human being, in fact, all human beings, are going through the process, whether they know it or not. And like J.J. and Desiree Hertak told me, that no matter how long a human takes, we're going to achieve perfection, and that we're actually doomed to perfection. No matter how hard we try not to, or how many times we screw up, we're going to eventually get to this level of perfection. So I don't exactly know how to answer that question, other than to say, as a journalist, I study a wide variety of spiritual traditions, and I try to find what they have in common. And so, let's say, from an ascended master tradition to a fundamental Christian tradition, both of them are talking about ascension. Both of them agree that Jesus ascended and he's a very important figure. The only real difference is that the fundamental Christians say that it's only Jesus we're supposed to be looking to, and that all the other ones are questionable as to who they are. And the ascended masters say, well, Jesus is definitely one of them, but here's also Saint Germain and Kuan Yin and El Moria and any number of other people that you might resonate with more closely, and those would be like your guides, your spirit guides, right? And so I don't really know what the reality is. I'm still exploring. I love debating about it with my friend, but my friend's 85. He just got his reading from David Lewis, and David Lewis said that, channeling Saint Germain, said that Harold had completed 97% of his spiritual tasks on earth, and that if he could finish the last 3%, he's not going to need to come back. And so if that's true, I'm hanging out with this guy who's ready to become an ascended master.
I'd love it. What's your second question, George?
Real quick, were we as humans kickstarted with DNA, with these higher consciousness beings, either physical or interdimensional?
Well, if you look at the Zechariah Sitchin theory, we were genetically altered by extraterrestrials. What do you think, Brett?
You know, I'm going with Lloyd Pye on this one. I think there's Darwin's evolution is at work, but there has been a break in the smooth chain of evolution. There's been an intervention at some point. You know, in the book of The Mayan Factor, The Path Beyond Technology by Jose Arguelles, that classic work from 87 that brought out the harmonic convergence and the knowledge of the Mayan calendar more to a general awareness of the public, they claim that humans were millions of years old already. And, you know, from that standpoint, human beings literally just need to wake back up to their true nature. I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there.
Talking about the Anunnaki and whether they genetically altered us or not.
So the Anunnaki, did they come? There's apparently plenty of evidence to suggest that that's true in the Sumerian pantheon. I talked to somebody who I promised I wouldn't say who it was, who said that Sitchin actually channeled all that stuff. And then ending with the Book of Enki, that's actually fiction. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure. Sitchin is where I started in terms of putting a big picture together in a large span of time. But there's other scenarios that are kind of similar to that, like, say, the William Bramley book. And,
yes.
You know, David Icke has a different scenario, or Michael Tesserian has a little bit of a different scenario. So I don't know if Sitchin stuff is all true. But I definitely think it's a good place to start, and it helps to expand your consciousness to be able to encompass these vast amounts of time and Earth history. But even if all Sitchin stuff is true, it doesn't explain all the things on Earth. So do I think there's been an intervention? Yeah, I definitely do. Who did it and why? I'm not sure. I have a feeling there's been more than one. And if David Jacobs is right, there's one that's ongoing right now.
Let's go next to Tanya in Pittsburgh, California. Hi, Tanya. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, I really like your enthusiasm, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why you see the ETs so much, because they appreciate that you like them. So I have a little bit of a weird short story to tell you.
All right, let's hear it.
I actually saw an alien about in January of this year while I was waiting to pick up my Frappuccino in Starbucks. And it was a Nordic, what they call a Nordic type of ET. It's the first one, and I hope it's the last one.
How did you know it was an ET?
Well, I knew. Here's the story. I know it's going to sound weird. I have an aunt who passed away. She was 93 years old in November. And for about 60 years, she and an uncle of mine, she was a dual citizen born in the state of Sinaloa of Mexico. She used to work energetically with this group of aliens and do physical healings for real people here in the world. Just like if you've ever had an energy reading by somebody, she would somehow people with illnesses, cancer, real health problems would gravitate towards her and my uncle, and they would take them energetically to this alien spaceship and heal these people. And she did it her whole life long. So she was really into ETs, and we used to have marvelous conversations, and she would tell me that the ETs were going to be presenting more and more in the world, and I would tell her, "Aunt, this scares me, and if I ever see one, I know I'm going to faint." Well, long story short, I went to visit her in Arizona in November, and I offered her a healing because I do spiritual work, which mm-hmm. I always do when I see her. Her ETs came down, wanted to give her a healing, but they told me, "Move aside because you're not into us." And
Did you see them, Tanya?
I saw them energetically. Energetic. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I saw their spaceship. They parked it right next to her house. And a group of the Nordics came. And her granddaughter worked on her while I just kind of stood and managed the energy of the room. Long story short, she made a decision whether she was going to stay or leave. And they said they're going to stay there for 2 weeks. They stayed for 2 weeks. And after the 2 weeks, they left and my aunt passed.
Wow. So, they may have taken her. You never know. You never know. Would they have done something like that, Brett?
I think there's that idea that when you pass into the tunnel, that's not what you want to do when you die, because then you're redirected back into a loop of reincarnation, and that is actually controlled by a level of aliens that are feeding off of us, right? We're just the cattle.
Don't go into the light. That's what they say.
Right. So, again, how do we really know that what is what? It's all really just testimony. And it's just another facet of how us humans are dropped into this absurd reality and expected to just figure it all out.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast on our next Coast to Coast program. Ellie Marzulli joins us as we talk about their incredible work of Fatima and so many more. And welcome back to our final segment with Brett Luder as we just get into UFOs. And he's a ufologist, and he's a darn good one, and he's proud to be it. And, Brett, how do you feel about being a ufologist?
Not something I really planned. But I think, like I was saying before the end of one of those last breaks here, ufology puts you on the fast track towards spiritual growth because it introduces you to such a wide variety of spiritual traditions, from Christianity or Judaism to Native American spiritualities to stuff that's from off-world. I mentioned Ekankar earlier. There's other traditions that are supposedly from off-world. And so to me, while I think it's important to figure out whether or not you're dealing with a demon, I don't think it really matters whether they're good or bad aliens. Either way, they're going to put you on that spiritual track. So from that standpoint, being a ufologist is a spiritual pursuit, but not in the way that detractors have said followers or fans, and they think that the aliens are God, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about as an individual that's on a path of growth towards, let's say, ascension, for lack of a better word. That's a whole other discussion. Ufology seems to speed that up. That's about the best way I could describe it. So how do I feel about being a ufologist? I feel like as a human placed in this magical universe using magic to navigate this absurd reality, I think ufology is like a kind of a light that's showing the way. So it's not going to give you any direct answers, although some may differ in that opinion. But it definitely gives you the carrots necessary to keep you on the path and keep you growing, to fight the programming of society, to overcome yourself and to be the master of your emotions. And then basically why we came here is to manifest the outcome and desired life that we think we deserve and should live. So I feel good about being a ufologist, despite ridicule and I mentioned earlier I play soccer.
Yeah.
Trying to talk about these kind of subjects over beers with a bunch of soccer players doesn't always go over well, right?
And that's so, exactly right.
Lots of arguments and every so often fisticuffs. But overall, I like being a ufologist.
Is it wise, because we've seen reports that we have fired upon these craft, is it wise to do that?
I don't think so. I think, like I said, we're not the hunters. If there's dark ones, the only reason they haven't taken us over with their technology is because there's some kind of a spiritual law, or the way I understand the spirituality is that it involves legal rights, and that the forces of the universe that maybe want to exploit us can't do it unless they get our consent. And you can consent in many ways other than saying, I will do it openly, right? Verbally. You cannot talk. Silence is acquiescence, right? As above, so below. So that's the way it is in law here. So you know that's the way it is in law up there in spiritual realms. So, yeah. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, you did. Let's go back to the calls now. Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure, Joe.
Good work, Brett. You've learned a lot.
Thank you.
And yes, when we make contact with the other side, if you will, and you can call them ETs in general, extraterrestrial, non-physical. I wanted to talk about the Palladians and some of the cults that they create, because the negative Palladians, not the positive ones, because there's a few of those. It seems that they like that's their MO sometimes. They create cults, followings, so they could mislead them. And yes, when we do pass over, we do have guides. And when you recognize your guide, you go with them, or you need to wait, because they're waiting for us, you know, the negative extraterrestrials. What have you found about cult mind control and extraterrestrials? And you mentioned a group called was that Ekankar?
Yeah,
that I was a member for 10 years and 8 months, and that's a cult. We call it black magic or demonic, and extraterrestrials are involved in that as well. That I found out through personal experiences and stuff. And when I left, my guide and other higher beings, told me and showed me. And I had run-ins with these beings on the astral, in the dream state, because you travel in the dream state if
sure
you
do.
Practice. Okay, Brett.
Take it away, Mr. Luder.
Well, I would just say that I think that's definitely possible. Raelians are another group that's been accused of being a cult. Of course, the Heaven's Gate people, that's the dark side of it, right?
Definitely.
Getting to self-mutilate and commit suicide, and I mean, it just doesn't get much darker than that. I asked J.J. and Desiree Herchak, about discernment on Earth, and why is it that people can't tell? I mean, if Lucifer is supposed to be an angel of light, how are we supposed to tell the good from the bad? And their response was, if you're confronted with a being and you're not sure if it's good and bad, ask it to leave. And if it does, then it's probably of the light, because that means it's respecting your free will. But if it doesn't and tries to talk to you still, then it's probably of the dark. So I do think that there are ET factions. Well, let me back up. If there are good aliens, and I'm open to that there are good aliens, I think that they've backed off and they're waiting to see how we're going to respond to the darkness, because we've drawn the darkness to them, or at best we've drawn both of them to us, the good and the bad. But the good ones, I think, are wanting to respect our free will, so they back off and they're waiting to see how we're going to deal with this darkness. I don't think that we're going to be saved by a big mothership, although maybe, who knows, maybe that'll happen. I don't know that it's not, but I just think that God wouldn't need to have broken into the individual parts that are us if we weren't charged as individual humans with some level of responsibility for our own spiritual growth. And so whatever spiritual tradition that you choose, I think that it doesn't matter, because that means that your intention is to grow spiritually. And so even if you're in the wrong spiritual path, it'll lead you back. Eventually you'll see and discern what a better spiritual path is, and then so forth, on and on to hopefully ascension, right? So the cult mentality, I think, can be very stifling, and it traps people in. It's very hard to leave. And that if I was going to say that there's one group of aliens that might be involved in that, I would have to guess it would be the reptilians. They seem to be the ones that, and while they're supposedly good ones, I don't want to paint all of them.
But they seem to be the evil ones.
They seem to get that tag more than any of the others, even the Greys. If you've seen Childhood's End by the adaptation of the Arthur C. Clarke book, it was a 3-part miniseries on the Sci-Fi Channel. I just flew out of my seat at day 3. When I forget the name of the alien came down, and it was this giant, like 9-foot, bright red, what looked like a devil or reptilian, right?
Looked like Satan, didn't it?
And and this brings up stuff like what Chris Putnam and Tom Horn have done some great work. Ex Evaticana, Petrus Romanus are two books I would recommend for everybody, and they basically outline how the Vatican has openly admitted that Jesus is an alien. And that they've known about this for a long time. And so that just makes you wonder what else they know. And is Jesus like some 9-armed hairy octopus type being that's going to come and we're all supposed to worship it, right? Just like Childhood's End. But so to answer your question, I definitely think that cult activity can only be exploited really when human beings are in a certain state of mind. And so, unfortunately, with a higher level of knowledge about us than even we have of ourselves, human beings are easily manipulated under certain circumstances. So it's an unfortunate thing. I'm sorry to hear that Ekankar is a cult, but the fundamental Christians where I'm studying self-deliverance in Yuba City, California, would definitely make the case that all that stuff is really powered by demons, as you were saying. So,
all right, let's go to our first-time caller, Brendan, in San Marcos, Texas. Hey, Brendan.
How's it going, guys? Thank
Great.
You for the call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to talk about an experience in 2014 where me and my friends went camping, and it started out with a single strike of dry lightning. There's no clouds in the sky. I had just made a remark like, hey, I've read online where dry lightning is associated with UFO
activity.
And later on in the night, we ended up setting up camp, and there was a series of gunshots next to us. It was like a pistol handgun, and we were right on the edge of the property line of this park, so we were like, okay, whatever. Maybe somebody's just having fun in the night, and we ended up deciding to stay, and we're at the top of the hill, and behind us was a cliff, about a 40-foot cliff. We started going down the hill, and I thought I was following my friend, and it stopped, and waited for me three times and waited for me to get closer. And on the second time, it put out its arm, kind of like a vampire pose, and looked back at me and covered its face with its arm to where I made eye contact with it, but it was covering its face. And on the third time, it did a clean tuck and roll into the bushes, and I thought it was following my heavyset friend. Obviously not possible. I got up to the bush, and at this point, everybody has their own version of the fair event. But when I got up to the bush, the moon was out, and I saw two long gray arms, kind of like an ape-like stance, and I just heard a, "Hey, come here." And none of them heard that, but at that moment, I realized it had been leading us here, and I literally stood up and started to run, and I was like, "No, F this. It led us here. It put us in these spots," and I took off running. And at that point, it took on different people's form in the night and infiltrated our camp and was talking to us. And we had to talk to one another and figure out which conversations we had actually had with one another. And it knew what we knew. It was using what knowledge we had against us. Like, for example, my friend didn't bring his phone. The entity covered its face with the phone. Later on, we realized that he didn't even have his phone with him. And it had asked for me specifically where I was. And at that moment, I had a feeling I needed to be constantly moving. And whenever we got up to the top of the camp and we realized we were being infiltrated, there was light swirling in the sky, two white orbs. And we're right by Austin, Texas. One of them flew northwest towards Austin and came back. Flew over the horizon and then came back, and they were both swirling ahead.
Let's get a little reaction before the clock gets us here, Brett. What do you think was going on there?
Wow, that's a great story. Really fascinating. You know what you might want to do is read Rosemary Ellen Galley's book, The Gin Connection. You know, in Bigfoot lore, too, not all the Bigfoot are really nice, right? They can be involved in, they've abducted, like, women or children and taken them into their tribe kind of thing. But as I learned from my work with Kiwani Lazaridis, who wrote the book The Psychic Sasquatch and Their UFO Connection, they work with UFOs. And so the possibility of maybe a not good Bigfoot working with aliens that maybe had a nefarious purpose, I think that's one possibility. That's what that may sound like. But at the same time, you're dealing with this thing was playing with you. It was like toying with you. And the Bigfoot aren't necessarily known to do that. So that's why I suggest reading Rosemary Ellen Galley's book, The Gin Connection, because the gin, according to her, like 40-plus years of research, whatever that is, they can take any form they want. They can take the form of different color orbs, shape-shift into different animals or beings, shadow creatures are supposedly gin. You've heard of the shadow men. You know, I would do research into the area. Maybe that's there's a Native American background there or something. But you've got a fascinating case on your hands, and there's many different angles of how you could approach that. Did anyone get hurt or psychologically traumatized to the point where their life is disrupted? Are they still functional? Or did anyone claim to have missing time?
That's a good possibility, too. We're almost out of time here, Brett. For people who want to track what you do, how do they find you?
Right now, just on Facebook, Brett Luder, BRETLUEDER. I think I'm the only Brett Luder on Facebook. And,
you love doing what you're doing. I can tell.
Say that again?
You love doing what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's part of being human is to try to find out who and what you are. And I think UFOs brings you to that edge of the cliff faster than any other subject.
Now, let's not let 6 years go by next time before you come back on, okay?
Please, let's do it again soon. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Okay, take care of yourself, Brett. I really enjoy it. And we've got links up at coasttocoastam.com on our next Coast to Coast program. To begin the show for the first couple hours, we'll be talking about the Watcher series and L.A. Marzulli. It's always a great program with L.A., part of the group. And don't forget to email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and just stick with us all week long. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morrison, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.